This is the Adam Gold Show.
Canes and Rangers, 7 o'clock. On the radio, if you are inclined. 99.9 The Fan, your home for the local broadcast the rest of the way. We are now all national, so ESPN has the entire series, I believe, in the Eastern Conference. It is Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. Dennis, do you have a concert you're missing now?
I do, actually.
Another one?
I do, potentially a second one. We'll get more into it later.
Oh, my gosh. They're out to get you, Dennis. All right, Football Outsiders asked the question earlier today, and I found it to be intriguing to me. So I reached out to Julian Council, Locked On Panthers podcast, to run this by him. And the question is and was, as I say hello to my friend Julian. How you doing, Julian?
Good afternoon, Adam. How are you?
Excellent. You sound good. Like you're patronizing me here. Good afternoon.
No,
you're talking to a 3-year-old.
No, it's a great day. It's a beautiful day. Like Carolina blue skies, not a cloud in the sky here. So it's a great day. I'm happy to be on with you.
All right. Well, I'm glad that you carved time out of your day. So Football Outsiders asked the question, the part of your favorite team, and in this case, we'll talk about the Panthers, their roster that still needs a lot of work. I'll just ask the question open-ended. What do you believe that is?
Well, it's still quarterback, isn't it, Adam? I mean, if we're being honest with ourselves, I understand that there's a lot of Panther fans that are excited about Matt Corral, the third-round pick who they traded up for out of Ole Miss, who some claim dropped. But if we're being honest with ourselves as well, this was not a great quarterback class in the NFL draft. The teams reflected that by only taking Kenny Pickett there in the first round of 20th overall going to Pittsburgh. So the quarterback situation in Carolina is not fixed. And the Carolina Panthers have said since they drafted Corral that because they took him in the third round, that they are afforded the opportunity to develop him and not have to play him right away. Whereas if they had taken him at 6th overall, of course the thought would be, all right, he needs to start week one against the Cleveland Browns. With that being said, that means that Sam Darnold would be the starter if they were to play a game today, tomorrow, or next week, or in very likely week one if they do not make any other changes to the roster in that quarterback room. Because Matt Corral, according to them, is a developmental quarterback. And as we know, P.J. Walker, albeit 2-0 as a starter, and QB wins is not a stat, is not a better option for the Carolina Panthers than Sam Darnold. So quarterback is still, to me, the position group that needs the most work on the Carolina Panthers roster. Might be solved in the future with Matt Corral, but as of right now, still don't feel very confident in that group's ability to help this team win the requisite amount of games for Matt Rhule to retain his job in 2023.
I think your answer is more correct than their answer. We'll get to their answer in a minute. But there is something that you said there that would really bother me if I were a Panthers fan, in that they believe that simply by drafting Matt Corral in the third round gives them time to develop him. And I would argue that it shouldn't matter where the quarterback is drafted. If he needs time to develop, you should allow that time to develop the quarterback, which in many ways is why teams, not just the Panthers, are in the positions that they are in, because they rush guys to the field before they are ready. And sometimes learning on the job ain't the way to get it done. Here's where I will differ from you in terms of the quarterback. I do agree that the quarterback is a problem for the Panthers. And I would argue this as an aside. If the Panthers finish, you know, where they're expected to finish in terms of, you know, if you just look at over-under wins, the total, which is 5.5
right
in Vegas. And so if they end up with a top six pick and draft a quarterback in the first round next year, which I think is likely if they finish with a top six or so pick, then what they did this year by trading future capital to get into the third round to draft Matt Corral is an indictment on the entire organization. But that's just an aside. That's just an aside.
Okay. Well, I mean, for me, though, like, and I understand where you're coming from. Like, they pretty much, you look at the move to get Matt Corral, it was drafting a quarterback to draft a quarterback. And Scott Fitterer has said that they probably need to go the traditional route. They've chased after quarterbacks over the last couple of off seasons, trying to bring in Matthew Stafford, Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, and none of those guys obviously wanted to come here to Carolina because they want to go somewhere else and win. Stafford won a Super Bowl his first year in Los Angeles. Like, for me, like, they bringing Matt Corral, I understand why they did it. But it seems like one of those moves, like, we just had to get a guy, we had to add to the room, and they did that by trading up for a player when they might have been able to get him if they would have just stayed there at 137 in the fourth round. At the very least, they could have taken Sam Howell, who didn't go into the fifth round, if they wanted to add a quarterback without giving up any assets. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter how you get there. As long as you find that franchise guy, I think that's all that matters in the end. But again, yes, value, that's all important. But until they find that guy, I understand why they're continuing to make some of these risks or take these chances and hope that whoever they land can eventually, you know, be the 10-15-year starting quarterback here in Carolina.
So here's my answer to the question that Football Outsiders posed, Julian Council, Locked On Panthers podcast. You can make the argument for quarterback or defensive tackle, the interior of the defensive line. By the way, their answer was the interior of the offensive line, which I actually think they've done a good job.
Really?
Yeah, I think they've done a good job, the Panthers, of addressing the offensive line as a whole. We'll still need to see it on the field, but I really like what they have done. I think their bigger problem for me, if I'm looking at it, because it relates to the quarterback, is who's he throwing to? I like DJ Moore. I like him as a second option, right? I don't really like anything else that they've got. So now I have a problem if I'm a quarterback. Like, who am I throwing to? That's my issue.
That's actually a really good point. This is something I've brought up on the pod, or you can find on wherever you get your podcast, and on YouTube, by the way. DJ Moore, fantastic wide receiver. Outside of that, we got a career year out of Robbie Anderson in 2020. And then last year, yes, the quarterback play was atrocious. Yes, the offensive line was atrocious. But Robbie Anderson was one of the top five guys in the league in drops.
Yep.
And DJ Moore also suffered a lot of drops last year. The whole entire Panthers wide receiving core suffered from drops. And it didn't help Sam Darnold or whoever played quarterback, Cam Newton, PJ Walker, in those situations. But still, Robbie Anderson regressed mightily this past season. And I'm sure if any team out there would have given Carolina a trade request, that would have made sense for the Panthers. They would have more than loved to move on from him. Terrace Marshall, who they drafted in the second round out of LSU, who's been injured pretty much the last 3-4 years. And when he's healthy, he's a good player. But the problem is he's rarely healthy when he was down Baton Rouge in this past season. Let's see whether he can offer something at all. But you don't really know. You can go off of, you know, the frame and the talent and the hope, but the hope is not a plan. Shai Smith, he's dealing with legal issues. We don't even know if he'll ever play for the Carolina Panthers again. And he was only a fifth-round pick out of South Carolina. Then Brandon Zylstra, honestly, was probably their most reliable wide receiver outside of DJ Moore.
And backup kicker. Don't forget backup kicker.
So that's not a great situation. So that's not a bad point to bring up there. I do agree with you. The offensive line, especially the interior, which was a massive issue last year with Elfline and Paradis and John Miller and Dennis Daly and Michael Jordan, the Ohio State version of Michael Jordan, and the football playing one, he's not very good at it. Those guys were not great. But now you bring in Austin Corbett, who won a Super Bowl with the Rams, Bradley Bozeman going to compete with Pat Elfline and then at center, and then hopefully Brady Christensen at left guard. You would feel a lot better about that trio than the guys that they trotted out there last fall. So I do agree with you there with the offensive line and wide receiver. I still somewhat of a question mark heading here in 2022.
Yeah, and it's not even just wide receiver. And by the way, throw in the kid Cade Mays from Tennessee. And I don't know how many people know who Greg Cosell is, but he's a talent evaluator. And he thinks that Mays is a future starter. So, look, you can find guys that can play in the interior of your offensive line if you're good at scouting. We think that Scott Fitterer is good at scouting from his time with Seattle. So if they found somebody who they could plug in, even as a good depth piece in the interior of the line, I like what they have done in there. But just back to the receiver thing, I think it extends to tight end. Like, Tommy Tremble, to me, is a really good number two tight end. Good blocker, can catch the ball in the interior of the field, but not going to wow you. But who's the other guy? Where is a dynamic player in the middle of the field? You know, it's a long way away from the days of Greg Olsen and, for a short period of time, Jeremy Shockey.
Well, Ian Thomas is who they paid this past this offseason a couple months ago to still be there and be hopefully a pass catching tight end. And we've been hoping and waiting and wishing this last four seasons to see whether he could be the heir apparent to Greg Olsen, which, as we've seen, has not been the case, and he's been a better blocking tight end, which was one of the criticisms that people had of him, that he wasn't even a great blocking tight end, but he's become far better at that than he has been a pass-catching tight end. And then you had last year, they brought in Dan Arnold, who had a career year back in 2020 with the Cardinals, and they traded him after 3 weeks in a hasty move to bring in CJ Henderson because J.C. Horn went down, and Scott Fitterer, the general manager, said, oh, this is about the future, not about right now. And well, he was out there playing against Dallas there in week four. So clearly they needed him after J.C. Horn went out for that foot injury for the rest of the season. So, yeah, tight end. And especially the scheme that they want to run. If you look at how Ben McAdoo and the Giants offense play back when he was the OC under Tom Coughlin, then the head coach there in New York, like they utilize the tight end. So they're going to want to have these two tight end sets and hope to see something out of Thomas and out of Trimble. Like, here's the thing, too. Like, Ian Thomas was one of those guys who, he played college football at Indiana, but he was a converted basketball player. And it takes time for these guys to come into the league. And act, and especially the tight end position is one of those, the slowest developing positions where you finally see production. And maybe here in year five, you'll start to see that production in Ben McAdoo's offense that loves to use the tight end. And as far as Trimble, I love the athleticism. He's obviously great when it comes to run blocking. I don't know. I look at him and see him as more as a guy who would project to be a serviceable receiving tight end, more so than what we've seen out of Ian Thomas after during his first 4 years. But again, it takes a while for that position to develop, and only time will tell. But they don't have a surefire guy, and having someone like that, I think, would have helped Sam Darnold, because when they traded away Dan Arnold, someone who he had a great connection with throughout training camp and in the preseason, you took away someone that he could have relied on as a safety valve that maybe would have helped him when he lost his main safety valve in Christian McCaffrey, who he targeted like 25 times in the first 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah, here's the thing. Like, I'm not a football savant, but I do believe there is a connection between quarterbacks and tight ends, Cam Newton and Greg Olsen, Tom Brady, and all of the tight ends in New England. They had at one point like seven tight ends on the roster. To me, that is the ultimate security blanket. And if you have a quarterback who is in any way shaky and he's got a tight end that he can rely upon, it just makes life so much easier. Julian Council, Locked On Panthers podcast, available wherever you get your podcast. Gentlemen, or sir, I thank you very much. You are a gentleman, as I was forgetting words to that sentence. How you doing?
Thank you so much, Adam. We're always happy to be on with you. And you are as well a gentleman. And I'm sure you were a scholar back in your day as
Never at any point, but thank you for pretending. I'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, take care.
You got it. Julian Council, Locked On Panthers podcast.
And now, your halftime entertainment.
No time on the board today.
We don't need time.
Yeah, we don't need time. Real quick, NHL note, released today, Alexander Barkov, Patrice Bergeron, and former Kane, Elias Lindholm, your finalists for the Selke Trophy.
First of all, Barkov is always on the list. Bergeron is always on the list. Like, I'm not lobbying for Jordan Staal. I'm not doing that. That's fine. There's a lot of great defensive forwards in the NHL. And scoring also matters. That's the dirty little secret is that how many points you score, like the Norris Trophy, somehow the only best defenseman happen to score a lot of points too.
Yeah.
All right. The Elias Lindholm thing to me is awesome.
Yeah.
And I will just relate this conversation I had with the current head coach of the Hurricanes back before he was the head coach of the Hurricanes. And it was during a time where I think a lot of Canes fans were wondering, is Elias Lindholm ever going to be that guy?
Mm-hmm.
He was fifth overall pick in his draft year as an 18-year-old kid out of Sweden. And the Hurricanes, who didn't have much else in the system, felt compelled that they had to put him on the ice. And it took him a long time. And he sort of was getting it the year before they traded him. And they traded him after the Bill Peters final season.
Mm-hmm.
But the year before was probably Lindholm's best year for the Hurricanes. And then his contract was coming up, and they couldn't reach an agreement that meant something that, you know, made sense for the team. So they included him in the Dougie Hamilton trade and all of that. But Rod Brind'Amour told me about Elias Lindholm. He is such a smart player. He's not going to get worse. He's a guy who will eventually get it. He got it.
Yeah.
Lindholm's numbers this year are mind-blowing.
Plus 62.
I can't even process that.
Plus 62.
He was over, was it a 90-point guy too, right?
Yeah.
He had an amazing year. He is a very, very good defensive player on top of all the other things he does. And I like when he plays a little bit of an edge too, a little bit of a, you know, a almost borderline dirty edge. I loved that out of him. I'm so thrilled that he has become this good.
Yeah, and with him as well, he averages over 2 minutes a game on the PK.
Oh,
he's that good. Yeah. And it was amazing.
Good face-off guy too?
Yeah. There was a time when Carolina was trying to find depth at center. It was a question. It was like, well, what about Elias Lindholm at center? Because they had him playing on the wing. It's like,
I always thought he was a center. Yes, always.
Put him at center, and he'll do better. And sure enough, he's flourished in Calgary. So props to him.
Absolutely.
And it's just fun seeing the guy that Jordan Staal shut down on this list as well. Yeah. Go figure.
By the way, Lindholm only had 5 points in the series against the Dallas Stars.
Oh, he stinks then. Cut him.
Hit 42 goals this year.
Yeah.
42 goals, 40 assists, 82 points, a plus 61. Gosh, that's good.
Yeah, pretty good player.
Yeah.
All right, Ricky Fowler, ahead of the PGA Championship, was asked about the LIV Tour.
Yeah.
He hasn't ruled it out.
I mean, I'll be straightforward with you guys. I haven't necessarily made a decision one way or the other. I've mentioned in past that... do I currently think that the PGA Tour is the best place to play? I do. Do I think it can be better? Yes. So I think it's an interesting position. And obviously there's the LIV and there's Premier as well. These tours or leagues or whatever, however you want to classify or call them, they wouldn't really be coming up if they didn't see that there was more opportunity out there. I've always looked at competition being a good thing. It's the driving force of our game. You know, being able to have games with guys at home, that's how I always grew up, is competing. I think competition ultimately makes people better, whether it's business, sport. So it's interesting, that's for sure.
All right. Here would be my follow-up to Ricky, and I'm still waiting for all of these follow-ups. How could the PGA Tour be better? Just a natural question. The PGA Tour is the best place to play. It's where the best players in the world are.
Mm-hmm.
All right. How could it be better? What's the answer to that?
Yeah.
Because I've spoken with tour players about this, and the only answer I get is the one I would suggest. If I were the PGA Tour, I would allow appearance fees. Because this is what Ricky Fowler, this is what Phil Mickelson's really talking about.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you know, they're going to pay us, like the total purse for the first LIV Series event is $25 million. There are 48 players in the field.
That's a lot of money.
There's no cut, right?
Yeah.
48 players, no cut, $25 million up for grabs.
Okay.
Yeah. I think the player who wins the individual, because there's a team component, gets like $5 million. Well, the top purse on the PGA Tour, other than the FedEx Cup playoff event at the end, where there's just bonus pool, the top purse is less than $2 million on the PGA Tour. So it's about essentially guaranteed money. That's all this tour is about. By the way, it's not competition. It's not. I mean, I guess it could be if enough players go to it.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen. But if the PGA Tour allowed appearance fees, because that's what these guys want, some of them anyway, they want to know that they're going to show up. You can show me how much you love me. That's what Phil Mickelson wants. Show me how much you love me, and I'll come and play your tournament. And all you got to do is give me $500,000 to do it. And I don't really see what the problem is if the PGA Tour allowed that. Now, you could put a cap on how much is available per each event, but who cares? Let them do what they want to do. If it's worth it to whatever the tournament is in Detroit, where Mickelson showed up a couple of years ago and didn't like the fact that he was being asked questions about his gambling. So if you're going to, let that tournament do that, they could buy Mickelson's affection for $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for them. They obviously feel like it's worth it. And that would be good for the star level players on tour to show up at those events. It would buy their love, which might help that tournament stay alive.
Yeah.
There used to be a long time ago when Tiger was playing a regular schedule. There were two tours. There were the tour events where Tiger showed up, and there were the tour events that Tiger didn't show up. Now these are basically only majors now. He's going to play, I don't think he's going to play more than 6 times a year, ever.
Yeah.
Again. But, so if that would help these events, then the PGA Tour should do it. But this ain't competition. Wait till you see the field for those events. And they are a bunch of absolute washed up players. Because right now, that's the category Ricky Fowler belongs in. That's sad. He's running from competition if he goes to live.
Yeah.
Running from it. Not joining a competitive entity. He is running from competition. That's where Sergio wants to go. Running from the competition. Lee Westwood. These are guys who are fringy competitive.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they are at this point. Sad.
All right, real quick, the Phoenix Suns, we all know, got blown out the other day. Well,
They got blown out again?
Yeah, they did. Well, now they're getting blown out on Twitter.
Oh, no.
Because yesterday, this is after we got off air, they released a statement after their loss. So this is what the statement says. Today's a new day for Phoenix Suns fans. The work on next season is already underway. As employees, fans, partners, and PayPal six-man members of the Phoenix Suns, you should be proud of what you have helped this team and our organization accomplish. I'm going to go on a little bit further. With greater success and expectation comes deeper disappointment. That's natural. Just know we all share in it, and our organization won't be satisfied until we bring an NBA championship to the Valley. Thank you for supporting us all season, and as we look ahead to the start of a new chapter. So they're getting roasted online for putting out a statement after getting blown out in Game 7. Basically an apology. Now, there are a couple of names, James Jones and Jason Rowley, that have their names signed on the bottom of this image that they posted online. Well, absent from it was the owner's name. So team owner Robert Sarver, yeah. His name's not on there.
Well, he's
which I find interesting.
Sort of reprehensible anyway.
So. Sure. So, yeah. So there's that. But also, again, the PayPal sixth man members. So he's had to slip the sponsor in there, too.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the thing. Again, as employees, fans, partners, and PayPal sixth man members of the Phoenix Suns, blah, blah, blah. That's like, really?
Don't apologize to your fans.
Exactly.
Don't apologize to your fans, man.
Don't do it. And here's something that's funny as well, is that people were tweeting. It's like, oh, Luka Doncic literally had a statement win.
Yes, exactly. Yes,
he literally had a statement win.
Gosh.
From that. So good for him.
That's a terrible look.
Speaking of golf, beer prices at the PGA have been revealed by people posting online. Even Justin Thomas was responding to this. So prices at the PGA for a Michelob Ultra, $18.
For what? For who?
For a Mick Ultra.
How many?
$18 for one.
$18
for one Mick Ultra. Just
for
a
one
tall can of it, like a 16.
Is that
ounce
a 16
can.
Ounce can of Michelob Ultra?
I believe
Ultra?
It's a 16 ounce can, but $18. $19 for a Stella Artois.
Wait a second.
Yeah,
an Ultra is 18, and the Stella must be just 12 ounces.
Might be.
There's no way you could do that.
Yeah, I think the Stellas are 12. Either way. But yeah, Michelob Ultra 18, Estella 19.
I don't even know what to say about that.
Wine, $13. And if you want to have a cocktail, like in a margarita or something like that, $19.
Well, that's an easy one. Just go for the cocktail.
Yeah, they're
it's probably not top shelf, but
yeah, probably not. There's something with Jim Beam in there, apparently. Look at the menu.
$18 Mick Ultra.
Even Justin Thomas tweeted it saying $18 for a beer. Got to treat the fans better than that.
It's not Augusta, man.
Yeah,
it ain't Augusta National.
Yeah. So
holy cow, that's steep.
That's a lot.
PJ of America, dip it into your pocket.
A couple of other things here to touch on real fast. NBA draft lottery is tonight as well.
Yes.
So we're looking to see where the Charlotte Hornets, hopefully they'll get a top pick. Also, USFL ratings stink. They're below a million viewers a game.
Look, I think stink is harsh.
Oh, it stinks.
But they are definitely on a steady decline. We're now halfway through the season. This was the first week where none of the games, which are now basically on network, whether it's Fox or NBC, none of the games rated got more than a million viewers first time. It's still pretty good. They outpace Major League Baseball on ESPN and MLB Network and FS1. But they're far behind the NHL.
Yeah.
And I don't realize playoffs. I get it. But football, I thought, you know, just watching two people stare at a football gets 3 million viewers.
It does.
But yeah, USFL ratings are down. I actually think if they could keep this number, it would be okay.
Yeah.
I think this number is probably fine. But
and
we'll see.
Last thing here, two things. A possum has taken over the Oakland Athletics press box.
Uh-huh.
Apparently a possum has. So a possum actually was seen. There are videos posted of a possum coming through the ceiling into the press box of the Oakland Athletics in the Oakland Coliseum. Members of the Minnesota Twins organization were saying how they had to move to a different press room so an exterminator can come in and try and capture the possum.
You call it exterminator for a possum? I'm not sure how it works.
I guess.
It's a rodent, right?
It's a rodent.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
So that's
taking over the press box.
Yeah, and final thing here. It's
probably doing the official scoring, too.
Probably. Also, primary voting is today. Polls close at 7:30 in the state of North
Carolina. Civic duty, people.
So please get out there and vote. I did that earlier today.
Civic duty. All right, when we come back, speaking of civic duty, Dennis will tell you which three games he's going to lose, and I will do the same. Next. I shudder to read the totals. Dennis, you went 0 for 3 yesterday?
Correct.
I went 0 for 2. I haven't lost the third one yet because it was a series bet with taking St. Louis to beat Colorado in the series. I am at plus 698. Dennis is at minus 1,800. So let's see if we can't do better.
Place your bets. Here we are.
I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal in Bushwood, sir, and I never slide.
Death! Okay, you can owe me. I owe you this.
I would just like to point out real fast that both of our totals were not this bad when Hayes Permar filled in last week to start.
Well, I had I was at one point up to like plus 16 something.
Yeah, I know.
Hayes has screwed that.
Yeah, and I was nowhere near as bad as I am.
Yeah, but you were already bad.
Yeah, but not this bad.
That's true. All right, sir, where do you want to start?
I'm going to go NBA. Celtics on the money line are a plus 110. I'll take that.
Celtics to win game one over the Miami Heat. Just jump right in.
Yeah.
All right, there's a lot of interesting NBA stuff to do. I considered Celtics minus 2 at the end of the first quarter.
Okay.
Right? At plus 155. But I'm going to go Bam Adebayo to score 20.
All right.
Or more, and the Heat to win at plus 350.
Okay. Very nice.
I mean, a Bam kind of night, and the Heat to win game one.
I like it. Tampa Bay Lightning, Florida Panthers start tonight. Tampa Bay moneyline plus 140. I'll take them in game one.
Yeah, I'm worried about them in game one. I'm worried about – I like them in the series. I don't like them in game one. But I appreciate your faith in the Tampa Bay Lightning. I will also take a hockey game tonight. Mm-hmm. Just give me the Blues outright, plus 180
okay.
tonight on the money line to take game one in Colorado.
I actually have him. I see him on DraftKings is actually plus 190. Sir.
Oh,
so if you want to take a plus 190,
plus 190 I'll
I would say go for that, there good sir. I'm actually also am going to go for my third bet. Gabriel Landeskog.
Right.
First goal scorer of the game, plus 1,300.
Look at plus 1,300.
For Gabriel Landeskog.
For Gabe.
First scorer of the game.
All right. Very nice. All right. So you're done. Yeah, those are your three wagers.
That's it.
All right. We're going to go to the Premier League. I was so successful yesterday. Odegaard didn't score, nor did Arsenal. I should have known that they had completely mailed it in after the loss to Tottenham over the weekend. But Liverpool, they pretty much don't have much to play for.
Not right now, no.
Liverpool City's not going to lose, so it doesn't even matter. Goal differential doesn't even matter. And Liverpool really is just trying to get healthy for the Champions League final next weekend. Not this weekend, but next weekend. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at Liverpool's lineup, and I just don't know. I mean, it's not a great lineup, not by Liverpool standards. But I'll still take the Reds to get the win at Southampton. But we're going to go Liverpool to win 1-0.
Okay.
Give you the exact score. It is, I believe, at plus 800.
Oh, wow.
To win 1-0. Nil.
Liverpool's a minus 190.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, I always like taking a draw when it comes to soccer. I always feel like that's going to be the safest bet.
Yeah, but I think Liverpool's going to figure out a way to win the match. They still have great players. I mean, it's still going to start Firmino up front. Diego Jota's still playing. They're just none of their – I mean, no Van Dijk, no Trent, no Robertson, no Henderson, no Salah. No Mane, I mean, no Luis Diaz. I mean, they had nobody in the lineup.
Yeah.
So it is, but I'll take him as to win 1-0 at Southampton.
A draw is a plus 370.
Yeah.
It does. I considered it.
You should have. You should go back and do it.
Landeskog plus 1,300 though.
Dennis is at minus 1,800.
I stink.
Plus 698.
I'm bad.
But it's been a drought of late. Most of that is Hayes Permar's fault. But
exactly.
I was 0 for 2 yesterday.
This is the Adam Gold Show.